What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hi you guys, it's Arden! Oh my goodness. We saved one of the best ones for a little bit later in our Feeling Thorny episodes, because we knew that this is a fan favorite. I do not underestimate Dr. Tana Banana. Would you agree, like, that this is somebody that when we do live shows, people are clamoring to see?
Yes, she is a superstar.
I'm going to actually quote our Patreon, Bachelorette New Zealand guys, and say she's a legend. She's a full legend.
She is a legend.
Before we get too far into it, I'm just going to do a little bit of, just a little, will you accept this rose housekeeping up top? We just so appreciate all of you that have gone on the ride with us. I asked for some more likes on iTunes. We're trying to get to 1,000. We're not now up to 754, and that is a bunch more than we had a couple days ago. So again, if you haven't liked us yet on iTunes, we really appreciate it. So we're going to keep putting up our Feeling Thorny episodes. We have a few more, which is super fun. And they've been inspired. And honestly, if I stand a chance of getting on the New York Times bestseller list with my upcoming memoir, Little Miss Little Compton, it's because of you guys. You've all really risen to the challenge, and we appreciate that. And as such, you are all invited, and tell your family and friends, everybody's invited. We are doing a virtual book release party / variety show. It's $5 to come. It's live, and you can email us. You can sort of message us as we're going. We can like respond and interact with you. It is Saturday, September 26th at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And the good thing about it's with Dynasty Typewriter, which is this really cool theater in Los Angeles that we did our draft picks last winter for those of you who came or listened. But they are so great. And it feels like, even though doesn't feel like a Zoom link. It's literally like you get a full show experience. And right now we have lined up Lauren Lopkus, who's a fan of The Bachelor and a friend of the show. You might know her as The Wrong Missy in the movie The Wrong Missy. Isn't she so great in that, Anna? She's so hilarious. That's the David Spade movie that Adam Sandler produced that's on Netflix. She's also on Orange is the New Black. She was in Jurassic World. She was on the show Crashing. She was on Big Bang Theory. So she is, she and I are sort of hosting it together. And then we have a couple of very special guests so far lined up. We have Mr. Brian Sofie will be appearing. Ooh. And he, you might know him from our podcast, but he's also the host of Throwing Shade, and he's the co-host of Ask Rana with Rana and Brian, which is a brilliant podcast that I just love so much that I've been on. It's hilarious. He's so freaking funny, isn't he, Anna?
One of the funniest. Truly one of the funniest.
He's also on 911 on Fox with Jennifer Love Hewitt, the Jennifer Lawrence of Fox shows. But another thing that we want to tell you So we're not going to, we're going to take a break so I can launch my book. We're not going to be watching a new show right now before Claire season. So we are putting up new episodes with the Feeling Thorny episodes. But if you're jonesing and you're like, Arden, it's a pandemic, I'm in trouble. The good news is any episode, any season that we watch, it would have already aired. It would have already happened. So if you want more on our Patreon, we are currently doing Bachelorette New Zealand. We also have past seasons of Bachelor Australia, Bachelorette Australia, Bachelor. We did Love is Blind. We're doing Real Housewives of New York and Bachelor in Paradise season 1 and 2 of Bachelor Australia. And what's so fun about that is HBO Max actually now finally is starting to air some of these seasons, so it's easier for you to watch like on your couch. You can also watch them on bachelorarchive.com, but HBO Max is putting up with Anna, and I think is the best season I've ever seen of the franchise, Bachelor in Paradise Australia season 1. There's like 3 couples that are like Carly and Evan. And we break it down every episode with Brian Safi, who's going to be at our live show, the book release party. And it's going to be a real party. And if you want to listen along, you go back to 2017. And the first episode is called Riding the Bipolar High. What can you tell our fans about that Patreon experience, Anna?
Well, one, we were, oh man, we were so young then when we recorded it. We were so
free. I was 11.
Yeah, like we were really truly having fun. It was our first experience with like an Australian series, and it was truly blowing us away. Like we loved it, and I wish to get that kind of joy back in life, you know?
Us trying to do all the accents, Brian squinching his eyes closed, trying to do the accents. I mean, so fucking joyful. If you guys are in need, this is the podcast equivalent of like a cocktail or a Prozac or a good meditation. I don't know where your sobriety issues are. I'm not trying to push anything on anyone. And in conclusion, I will say what's very fun and cool about the Dynasty Typewriter book party. So we also have another person. So we've got me, Lauren Lopkus. We have Brian Safi and Bachelor of the Year, Rob Benedict, is going to come on. He's going to like chat with us, tell a story, and he's going to, I've requested a specific song, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it might be a Katy Perry cover because J.J. Marine loved Katy Perry, and he's agreed to learn. I asked between Katy Perry, my mom loved Katy Perry, and she loved Britney Spears. He picked Katy Perry, and he is going to close out the show with a Katy Perry cover. There's also going to be some special surprise guests. So get your tickets now. It's $5. It's on our Facebook page. Literally, it's a fun, it's at 5 p.m. Pacific on September 26th. The link will be up for a week. So even if you can't join live, you can enjoy it afterwards. And if you, they have a bundle going that if you get your book through there, we've partnered with Skylight Books in Los Feliz, California, and they're doing a thing where you can get a custom signed book plate. So if you're like, I want to get my friend Mary a book plate for her birthday, I can sign out, Dear Mary, happy birthday. So you can order and you can tell me who to make it out to. I will sign a book to you or a loved one. Or if you're like, Arden, I don't want to come to your show. I just want a book plate and I want a bag. I don't even know if they have the bags left, but the website would tell you. For the first 250 people who get, for the price of the book, you get a Little Miss Little Compton tote bag and a signed book plate. And then the second 250 is just a signed book plate. You can go to ardenmarinebook.com. It's also on our Facebook page, but ardenmyrinbook.com, and get that there. Without further ado, this person that we're breaking down in this episode of Feeling Thorny is our Secretary of State, Padgett Brewster. Anna, this episode is fascinating. It was fascinating to hear from Padgett and get to know her more. We went to the same high school, and we tell a crazy story about our art teacher that allowed nude models. And I've never met somebody in Los Angeles. I've done this a long time. I've never met somebody that actually, almost like a 1950s old-fashioned movie star, where they're like, we're going to make you a star, kid. Like, she literally is the only person I know that Hollywood just decided they went out of their way to make her a star. And it was fascinating. fascinating to talk to her. Tana, what did you think?
It makes sense because Padgett is a star and everything about her, like, I was somewhat not surprised. I was like, yes, makes sense. She was this beautiful young woman. Hollywood was dying for a Padgett Brewster.
Yes. And Hollywood was like, we know there's not going to be another one. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've gotten some really great responses. I love that people are enjoying the Feeling Thorny episodes. They're a little more, look, I feel like in these times like this, we have our fun, crazy parties, but it's also nice just to get a little bit grounded and get to know who you're listening to. And we hope it makes you guys feel connected and that you enjoy it. And we can't wait to be back breaking down some people falling in love in 190 degree heat, quarantined in a bubble somewhere deep in the desert. But we really appreciate all of your support. And we hope you come to our party, our book release party. And you can message us as we're going. So, like, we want to feel like we're at a live show because we have the best live shows with you guys.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hang out.
So please come hang out and tell your friends. It doesn't matter what time zone you're in. Any time zone. Okay. Bye. Welcome to Will You Accept This Rose, a production of iHeartRadio. Oh, my God. We're back. Yeah. We're back in our safe place. Yeah, yeah, it's the same pod, but it's an offshoot.
Oh, interesting.
It's an offshoot. Yeah. It's a bonus offshoot. When you accept this role, this feels right. I don't know what's what.
I think I just saw Mark Rivers walking. Oh, when you accept this role, keep your word. Mark Rivers.
Oh, my God, he's the best. He's the best. I love Mark Rivers. Mark Rivers, you've probably never heard your song played on the podcast before, but God, he did such a good job. But wait, there's somebody else talented out there, and his name is Avery.
What? You know what time it is?
What?
It's time for Arden to get a little close.
Oh, what's this?
And a little thorny. Oh, well, Arden's gonna go one-on-one. Gonna be high energy fun.
Yes.
Combos are gonna be super real.
Okay.
She wants to get with you in all the feels. Feeling thorny.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
this is a feeling thorny.
Feeling thorny.
With Aden Marie.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Hello.
Feeling thorny.
Oh, my God. Hello. Thank you very much, Avery Pearson. Welcome
Great.
To a very special episode of Will You Expect This Rose bonus offshoot, Feeling Thorny. My name is Arden Marie, and I am so happy to be doing a Feeling Thorny with a very special person. She's in the clubhouse today. She's looking so cute in her winter wear. Oh. She's showing up looking so cute in her jeans that cannot possibly be Rite Aid jeans.
They are.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may know her from the Will You Accept This Rose franchise. You may know her from Criminal Minds.
Maybe.
You may know her from Another Period.
Maybe.
You may know her from Thrilling Adventure Hour. I know her as my friend, Secretary of State, Padgett Brewster.
It's me.
Hi, Padgett. Welcome to Feeling Thorny. How are you?
This is so exciting.
Now, for those of you out there who are like, wait, what is this? For those of you who don't know, I have a book coming out this fall, and there is a link up right now so you can pre-order your book. And the reason I'm doing this podcast is the process of writing it. It was about my childhood and growing up and my life now, but I felt like it forced me to take a look at myself and my adolescence and whatnot. And it was an interesting process, and I wanted to get to know the people that are on our podcast and hear, like, what made you. That's why we're doing this.
I see.
So if you're out there, you know what? Please just go pre-order the book, right? Just go on Amazon.
Can I pre-order Kindle?
Yeah,
Kindle?
Little Miss Little Compton. So Padgett Brewster, hello, welcome. You and I, first of all, you're wearing adorable jeans. You say they're always from Rite Aid.
These are Rite Aid jeggings.
How much do they cost?
I think they're $17.99.
Can you stand up for one second?
Yeah.
Can I look at these?
Yeah.
Do you only wear Rite Aid jeans?
Well,
they're
no.
So.
I get the nice ones now. Look, fake pocket, fake fly, real pocket.
And they are so cute.
They're just comfy.
How many pairs do you own?
I have three of these because I did, you know, sometimes I stain them and now I'm old and wealthy enough to donate those and get a new pair.
Do they come in like a box or in a hanger?
No, it's like a plastic hanger and a piece of cardboard around it.
Like
you get
tights,
it at Rite Aid.
Like tights.
They're like
tights.
They're called Rite Aid jeggings.
They're Rite Aid brand jeggings.
Well, no, they're not Rite Aid brand. They might be No Nonsense. I want to say they're made by No Nonsense.
I only wear No Nonsense socks. They're the best socks.
They're great.
I also want to tell you, staring at your beautiful lashes, that you told me to get
Revitalash.
And I had to have it shipped to New York to my brothers.
Yeah.
And I did. And I went and got my hands on it. And my I've gotten lots of compliments. My lashes... Now, I'm a little worse for the wear today, but
have gotten longer.
Gotten longer. Revitalash. They've gotten longer.
Wow.
I mean... How
Congratulations.
Long have you been, do you do it every day?
I do it every day.
I haven't done it every day.
Well, they say you can do it every other day. And there are days when I forget, so it probably equals out to every other day.
I got
to
start doing it every day.
But here's the thing. I've been noticing that they're curling because I'm falling asleep. They're so long that I'm falling asleep on them.
Yeah.
And then they're curling.
They're amazing.
So some of them are straight and then some of them are curling. So it is definitely a process.
How short were they to begin with?
I don't remember. Honestly, I've been doing this 10 years.
I'm going to do it.
I don't remember. Did it happen right away or did it take a couple of weeks? For me, nothing happened for 2 weeks and then I woke up and they were long.
I haven't. I'm prone to getting styes. So I've noticed my eye keeps threatening to grow a stye. So I haven't been doing it every day.
No. You should be careful.
Yes. So I'm prone to, my eyelid loves to grow a stye. So I'm sort of would say I've been inconsistent with it. But it's working.
Then do exactly what you're doing.
It's been inconsistent. But it's been working. Okay, Padgett, first of all, such a treat, such a joy to get to know you on the podcast, can I say? Because I've known you for a long time, but actually so nice to get to know you. And here's what's interesting. Padgett grew up, so we talked about in the Erin Foley episode, we'll air Padgett's after. Like, I got shipped away to boarding school because my town didn't have a high school. And Padgett grew up on the campus?
Yes.
And went to the school. What building did you grow up in?
I grew up in Clay House.
So this was in Concord, Massachusetts. It's a school of 300 people in the woods. My mother took out a mortgage, like a third mortgage, to send us. She said she was going to run out of money for college, which she did. She was like, you need to get a good education. I didn't get a good education. I'm sending you to boarding school. You grew up in Clay House. That was a boys' dorm.
It was a boys'
dorm. That
was like
the nerdy boys' dorm.
Correct.
It was like the science boys' dorm.
I think so, yeah, because the science teacher was the other apartment in the dorm.
What was it like growing up on the campus of a New England boarding school?
It was fantastic.
Was it?
Yeah, because it was my brother and I and all of the other faculty kids. There were a bunch of kids our age. We're in a completely safe environment.
Truly the prettiest. That movie, School Ties.
School Ties was shot
school
there,
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like a perfect campus around the circle in the woods near Walden Pond.
Yeah, there's a church and a big circular, the dining hall, and then there's
It's near like Little Women. Like, picture Little Women, but like in
this was
like,
the town where Little Women, where Louisa May Alcott lived.
So would you just go out and play with all the other kids?
Yeah, and we had an ice skating rink, and we had a library and a pond.
Right.
And we had playing fields and tennis courts.
Were you
born? We had a dining hall.
Is that where you got brought home from the hospital? That's where you...
No, I think actually my dad was working for my mother's father in banking, and he hated it. And so once I was born, my dad said to my mom, I just want to teach.
Wow.
And my mom did too. So... he got a job at Middlesex as an English teacher.
Great.
And then he started coaching. He was the coach for hockey and soccer and crew.
Okay. Those are big sports. There.
Yeah. And my mom was the ceramics teacher.
Wow. Okay. I have so many questions. Did you eat at the dining hall?
Yes, we did.
Every night?
No, not every night, because my mom started becoming a really experimental cook. Around, I would say, when I was 10 or 11 and my brother was 7 or 8.
Was it fun to eat at the dining hall?
Oh, it was the best, yeah.
In what way?
Well, first of all, it felt like if you're a little kid and you're in a cafeteria.
With like
It's all students. Some of them are your babysitters, and you know all the teachers, and you know all the other kids who are growing up on the campus.
Yeah.
So it felt like a party, and you get in line, and you get – I mean, to this day, a cafeteria is so satisfying
to me.
I
love a cafeteria. I love a buffet.
I love a cheap buffet. I love it.
I like a soup plantation.
Yeah.
I love it.
I want to get a bunch of little things that I can I loved being able to go to the cafeteria, but – when we went with our parents, if we had to sit with our parents and our parents made us get, you know, a bunch of vegetables that we didn't want.
Yes.
There was actually in the dining hall at Middlesex, the walls are lined with what is the senior project. When a senior graduates from Middlesex, they have to carve a little
wooden plaque,
8 by 8 inch wooden plaque with a depiction of something or, you know, something that represents them. And those are the entire, you know, floor to ceiling of this very, very large dining
hall. It's like Hogwarts.
Hall.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that is kind of what it looks like.
It looks like Hogwarts.
There was one carved. The senior had carved a brick wall with a hole in it, right? As if the brick wall had crumbled through. And all of the faculty kids, we would throw all the vegetables we didn't want into that hole in the wall. And after a few years, they had to tear out that part of the wall and dig out all the it was disgusting. It's really disgusting.
I remember when I went to school there, and I will not say her name, but there was a girl who got kicked out. She was like a rich New Yorker, and she went nuts. She had like a mental break one night, and she broke out of her dorm. She was a senior, and I was a sophomore, and she broke into the main like academic building. I forget the name of it. What was that building? The big main building, the administration building. And she went downstairs, and in all the plaques, she shoved like kielbasa sausage like in the holes of the plaques. She like shoved all the sausages in all the holes, and then she went into the girls' room and she shoved sausages in all of the toilets, like fistfuls of sausages in all the toilets, and flushed all the toilets so it flooded with sausages and the holes of the plaques. And she got sent. She got expelled. And she like wrote all the shit, but it was like she was. I just remember her jamming sausages in all the holes. If that's not the most sexually repressed, I mean, that's, Anna looked shocked. Anna, what are your thoughts?
Why?
I think it's such an uptight place, and if like she wasn't super cool, she wasn't like I didn't fully fit in there. I mean, it is a very preppy school, and I think she just maybe was acting out like fuck this place, but she acted alone. Like she did that alone.
Well, that's I mean, here's the thing. I was asked to leave.
Yeah, you were
in my sophomore year. I was failing because I was trying to fit in, but a lot of the students. And I went there before you did because I'm a couple years older than you.
Yeah.
A lot of the kids there were very, very wealthy.
So rich.
South American. There were kids from China and England.
We had a lot of New Yorkers.
Yeah, it was a lot of New Yorkers.
They were so and gossip girls.
Their parents almost had kids because they were supposed to is what it felt like. And so these kids were so – they were acting out, and they were lonely and rich, and there were a lot of drugs, and a lot of drinking, and sometimes these kids would a helicopter would land right in the middle in front of the church and pick up the New York kids one by one, fly to New York, and they'd be dropped off on Sunday night.
I never had we didn't have that.
So that girl might have been just a desperate cry for attention from her parents.
For sure. Well, we didn't have helicopters. That's crazy. Wow.
It was wild. There were the heirs of everything. I mean, huge corporations. These kids were going to school at Middlesex.
I remember because we didn't have that money. And I remember the beauty.
Yeah, neither did we. Neither did my family.
The beauty of a boarding school is like nobody knows what your house looks like. And nobody like we all knew who all the rich people were because they only hung out with each other.
Right.
But you could kind of hide stuff because nobody knows your house, your family. Like nobody knows anything but about you. It's like college kind of. Mm-hmm. But I do remember going to graduation parties and just the size of these houses. Like Somebody at the time, it was like the 90s, and like somebody somebody's family hired Blues Traveler, which was like the band at the time. And like Blues, like the drummer was like hitting on one of the girls. You know, it's just like, who hires? Like,
wow.
I kind of felt like the parents might have been in the mob. It felt like a mob. It felt like a Locust Valley mafia situation. It was just like, it was so crazy. Mm-hmm. One kid's parent owned the Biodome. It was just, it was nuts. It was not okay. So you grew up on that campus
in the dorms, yeah.
And it's also surrounded by teenagers. Mm-hmm. Was that formative? Like, how to me, teenagers are so exciting. And like, did you sort of watch them? Were you aware, or was it more just about the other kids, the other faculty kids? Like, when were you sort of watching the teenagers?
I probably when I was, 12, 13, and then I was going to school there when I was 14. I would say 11, 12, 13, I started paying attention to the students. I do remember. And it must have been 1977, the school went co-ed. I think it had only been boys at that point. And I was born in 69. Yeah. So there were girls in the dormitory.
Yeah.
And a couple of high school girls got me stoned. And I had to have been 8.
No.
And I remember smoking pot. And then watching a girl blow dry her hair for what felt like hours.
Whoa.
And I was so mesmerized.
Oh, poor
so there was
Padgett.
Well, there was an element of listen, horrible things could have happened that didn't, thank God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I mean, because we were free.
Yes.
We were just free to go wherever we wanted. Of course, we couldn't just go walk around into dorm rooms. But, you know, the teenagers would see kids and be like, come on, come up to my room and hang out.
Well, I felt like even you know, looking back and writing a lot of my stuff in the 80s, I felt like they would just take it a rated R movie. Like, there was no babysitter. The babysitter was the TV. You know, like, there's like, you're sort of freer. Like, if you can bike and just come back by dark, and like, it's very Stranger Things, like Charlie Brown. I feel like the adults.
Oh, yeah. No,
the adults are not.
Get on your bike.
Yeah.
And just make sure you're home before dark and knock on the door when you're home.
Yeah.
Or be home by 10.
Yeah.
When I was 13, 14, when I was younger, my brother and I would just ride our bikes around, little kids.
Yeah.
And come back when the sun starts setting.
I know, I was like 6 or 7. I remember, it was
we would come back for dinner.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe we'll go to the dining hall.
Yeah.
Or mom would make some weird shit.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Did you get kicked out? And if so, where did you go?
Part of the
CCHD?
I went to Concord Carlisle Public High, part of the payment, you know, my parents made combined as teachers $13,000 a year. And it was, they just weren't, their housing was paid for and we could go to the cafeteria. So they didn't make a living wage technically. If you, at that time, you wouldn't be able to support a family of four on, you know, my mom was only allowed to teach for a few years, and then they made a rule saying spouses couldn't work. And
So
part of their payment was if their kids' grades were good enough, their kids could go to Middlesex for free.
Great.
And Middlesex was a great school. It maybe had some troubled kids, but they had great teachers, and it was a valuable education.
Yeah.
So my grades were good enough. I started attending. I went freshman year, and I was an outcast because my parents were teachers there.
Right.
So everyone knew, you know, I lived in the dorm.
Right.
It was like welfare case.
There's some tough girls there.
I
didn't fit right in. I had like three.
No, and it's a tough school. It's not for everyone.
No.
Did you graduate from there?
I did, but I have to say, like,
so impressed.
I have gone back to I went to a couple of reunions, and I remember going, it wasn't just that I was 16 that I didn't fit in, like, or that I didn't relate. I don't relate. Like, I'm not, I was just saying this to Aaron, like, what the beauty of it was, I'm not a lacrosse player or a field, like, my interest, the beauty of them not being interested in any of the stuff I was interested in is nobody cared about the theater, so I could just write plays and put them, I had access to stuff that no one was looking at because nobody cared about.
And they thought it was uncool.
It was uncool. What was interesting was the two funniest people that were there with me have gone on to, they've both become like, it's Alex Sulkin, who's the Sulk, who wrote Ted, and he writes for Family Guy.
Oh my God.
And then it's John Viner, who writes for Family Guy. Like, so it was like the three of us were doing stuff in the theater, and then there was all the other jocks. That's but like wild. It's interesting that none of us had any connections, you know, and like, but everybody made it from there, which is odd to me.
Your friends.
We were like pals. Like, yeah. So it was like the three of us were the ones that were sort of the funny ones. But not – John was like the president of the school. He was like that. But like, you know, we were like not – no, we were not the king and queen of the prom.
No, no, no. I know. Yeah. I know exactly who they were. I grew up around it, and it was very
– preppy.
Money-centric and preppy.
Old boy.
And
old boy.
Old boy network. And it also – you – I can't imagine it was different for you than it was for me.
It was
because
not.
It was just gawky – artsy,
yeah, it didn't make
outcast,
sense.
Outcast, not enough money, mm-hmm. not, you know, I didn't know enough about. There were things like these kids were so rich that they would know about food I'd never heard of. And then I would be an idiot that, you've never been to Prague? Like, fucking Prague.
No, I know.
You know,
I
you
know.
Just.
I know. I remember, like, I'd never heard of, like, arugula or, like, balsamic vinegar.
Oh, something, yeah.
You know, you're like, oh my God, like, you don't eat Catalina dressing and iceberg lettuce. Like, you fancy. Like,
it's wild.
Yeah, it was
just
fully,
a different world.
Completely. We were Stouffer's, like, mm-hmm. like a fancy night. It was like a French bread pizza from Stouffer's, which, by the way, I still love. It's delicious. So then you went to Parsons.
I did. Well, here's what happened. Just to quickly go through.
Please.
So I was asked to leave Middlesex.
Yeah.
I went to Concord Carlisle Public High School for the second half of my sophomore year.
That's hard.
And then it was hard because they
Coming
thought I was
middle.
A rich kid because
yeah, exactly.
I lived
you can't
at Middlesex.
Win. That's right.
So
you
I was
can't
just
win.
I was just
yeah, you're a snob. Like, just, oh, okay, Middlesex.
Yeah,
must
I was
be nice.
Clobbered.
How's your mother? Must be real nice,
yeah.
Asshole.
Yeah. And then I begged my parents because up until I went to Middlesex, I had gone to all girls schools because my parents were educators and they borrowed money from my grandparents.
Yeah.
Their priority was making sure my brother and I went to the best school possible.
That's what my mom did.
It was heartbreaking.
That's what my mom did.
Middlesex didn't work out
yeah.
for them because they were hoping so much that, you know, that would be covered. And
yeah.
So I begged them to send me back to girls' school.
Yeah.
Because I had been to private girls' schools, day schools, up until Middlesex. Then girls' school. I went to a girls' boarding school in upstate New York, or well, in Westchester County, New York, in Dobbs Ferry, called the Master's School, which is where my mom graduated from.
Okay, okay.
So that was great. I enjoyed girls' school.
You did
because the pressure. What's going on in a co-ed school system? It just didn't fit for me.
No.
I didn't fit in. I wasn't popular. I wasn't hot. I wasn't part of a couple. I wasn't was a fringe
me too.
Art nerd
me too.
Freak who made her own clothes
yeah,
out of Goodwill jackets. And
yeah,
I made my own jodhpurs. I would tailor men's pants to
there's
look like
a whole chapter that I only wore knickers until I mean literally I wore like purple knickers that was and then like bowler hats and circle skirts and vests
yep.
like Yeah, it was.
You had your own style.
I had like a time traveler.
It did not fit in.
No, no,
no.
Yeah. I didn't have like the thin swinging ponytail like while I played lacrosse. Okay, so you go to the girls' school.
Went to the girls' school. Graduated in 87.
Okay.
And went to Parsons School of Design in New York City.
Studying
the following
what?
Year.
For fashion?
It was just foundation year. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew, honestly, I still feel bad about this. My parents know. I feel guilty about it. I had always been in advanced art classes, so I knew I could get in at Parsons and Pratt and all the art. I wanted to be in New York City because I wanted to pursue acting.
You did.
And I didn't have the courage to tell my parents that I wanted to act because that is – it's – unheard of.
I like that art school is the safe choice. It's like the equivalent of somebody going to business school.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm going to go to art school.
No, art school was okay because my mom's an artist and a ceramicist.
Yeah.
But that was still like, there was still sort of an old patriarchal society when I was growing up, it was coming to an end. Suddenly in the 70s, there were, you know, divorces in women in the workforce in a way that hadn't existed before.
Yeah.
So when I was a little kid, it was assumed that I would – go to college for a year or two, marry a man, stop going to school and stay home and raise kids. Wow. That was the world that I grew up in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so going to art school was – I figured they weren't that invested in it because they assumed I would get married.
Right, right.
And I wasn't invested in it because I wanted to pursue acting. And I did, and I went around and apologized to all of my teachers at Parsons.
Okay, so here's a question. Before we get to that, do you still make art? And what did you make to get in? Like, what was your specialty?
Oh, I had so many advanced placement art classes and art history, and I loved them. It was what was my AP? It was works of art based on specific pieces of music.
Okay.
So they were all – each art piece was really – was based on the – you know, a song. One, I think there was – one Stravinsky Fall from the Four Seasons, pop music, that song.
Do you still have any of them?
No, no. I don't know.
So how did
I don't know how I got in. I got in. I don't know.
How did you start pursuing acting? Like, so did you – when did you know you were like – when did your secret desire awaken inside you?
Well, I had been in all of the school plays.
Okay.
At the last 2 years at the – boarding school, at the girls' boarding school. And my dorm mother's husband, our like the dorm father or whatever,
yeah.
He was actually a professional working actor in New York City.
Okay.
And he watched all the plays, and he had said to me when a whole bunch of us were in their house for fondue or I don't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
He said, I think you really have a gift and you should pursue it.
That's nice.
And so I was, you know, that's all I wanted to do, but I knew I had to go to college.
Was that a present that really, like, do you think him saying that?
Yeah, Dan Daly. I don't know what he's up to now. He was an actor in
New York.
Do you
think you would have pursued it if Dan Daly hadn't told you that?
Yeah,
or? Yeah.
I do. I think I would have, yeah. Because I knew I wanted to do it. I'd always wanted to do it.
So you get to New York. You're at Parsons.
I'm going to Parsons. I'm living in the George Washington Welfare Hotel on 23rd and Lexington.
Wow.
And I had an 8-by-10-foot room with its own bathroom, though.
That's pretty good.
Most of the... apartments in quotes.
My friend Chris.
You shared a bathroom.
She had to share a bathroom.
Yeah.
When we worked at Conan, she shared a bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like one, she had a bed, and then she shared a bathroom.
Yeah.
Okay, so you...
Well, I was also... my parents paid for my rent and my rent and my bills, but I had to buy art supplies.
Okay.
And that in itself was kind of a racket at Parsons, where a bunch of the teachers had art supply stores in the building.
Right.
And you would go to class and they'd say, oh, everyone has their charcoal number 7. And people are like, no. And they'd say, go downstairs and buy it. So all the teachers were sending the students to go buy from each other. So it was expensive because you'd have to go downstairs and buy a charcoal set or a certain kind of piece of paper.
It's like going to the airport store.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like,
a $7 bottle of water.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was hostessing at the Figaro Cafe on 8th Street weekends.
8th and what?
Not Astor Place. It's 8th Street. It's in the West Village. Figaro Cafe, 8th Street.
I feel like I remember that.
It's probably still there.
Yeah.
It had been there since the 40s or something.
Okay.
So I was hostessing there, and then I met a guy in my building, and he was going to NYU, and they were doing Hurly Burly through the Circle in a Square
the
Theater.
The David Robb play, which is great.
Yes. And he was hitting on me. I didn't get it at the time. He was hitting on me and he said, you should audition. So I auditioned, even though I wasn't part of NYU. I'm not quite sure how that happened. And I ended up getting the part of Darlene and performing
at Circle and Square.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
In like somehow associated with NYU, which doesn't make sense because I had nothing to do with NYU. I apologized to all my teachers and I told my parents I was dropping out.
What year is this? Sophomore year?
This is my freshman year. This is my first year.
Wow.
So this is 6 months in at Parsons.
Okay.
I've auditioned for a play, gotten a part, and started doing it.
Was it your first audition?
Yeah, it was.
So you got your first audition.
Wait.
You got the play.
I mean, besides school auditions. Yeah, it was my first audition. You're right. I hadn't even thought
amazing.
About that.
So you got your first audition, you get the play, you drop out of school.
I drop out of Parsons.
And how long did the play run for?
I mean, you know, a month and a half, 2 months.
Did it get you an agent?
No.
Okay. One of the things that I think is so interesting about Padgett that I remember meeting you a long time ago, but like you had a, and I don't, I'm, you had a very successful late night talk show called Padgett in San Francisco.
Yeah.
How did you get from New York to San Francisco?
It's so brief and makes perfect sense. So after Hurley Burley, I still didn't know how to get an agent. I didn't have the courage to tell my parents I wanted to go to acting school. They said, if you drop out of Parsons, you're cut off. I said, okay. I had a boyfriend who was a drummer. We formed a band together.
Yeah, you did.
We lived together. I was waiting tables at this point. We played in that band in New York from 88 until 93. I said to him, we broke up our band. We had a big fight.
Yeah,
and the
did.
Band broke up. And so it wasn't working out with him. He was from San Francisco. I was working two jobs. He didn't work for years.
Yeah.
And I finally was I got to get out of here. Let's move to San Francisco.
Yeah. If you're the only one working in your pit, I dated a guy that I was like, wait, did you just come right here after work? Did you get rid of your apartment? Like, are you freeloading off of me?
Yeah.
Run.
Yeah.
Just cut and run.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do it once.
Do it once. Yeah.
And then don't do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
So we moved to San Francisco.
Yeah.
We got an apartment. We started to half-assedly try to put another band together. And I broke up with him. And I was bartending, you know, to pay my rent. I had an apartment by myself. An agent hung out at my bar. It was called the Slow Club in Potrero Hill. Very nice, fancy, upscale, pretty bar restaurant. And this guy Henry Malden hung out at the bar, and I was going to acting school. I kept saying, hey, why don't you represent me, be my agent? And finally one day he said, okay, fine, I will send you on three auditions. Get the job, I'll be your manager. I said, okay, great. He sent me on meetings for hosts, correspondents, and anchor people. I didn't know. I was 20. This was 1994. I was 25.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were different kinds of managers. I thought they were all for acting.
Yeah.
So I was meeting with people as a host.
Right.
I was also doing a public access television show called Strange America that was just sketches and interviews and just goofy. Public access used to be like you could put on whatever you want. I was doing that with a couple of guys who were in tech. So I ended up getting a pilot deal to shoot the Padgett show.
Yeah.
To host a talk show.
You did like 85 episodes. Right?
65. 65? It was 65 episodes.
I mean, so were you like,
there's
Oprah?
There's one online.
What? Okay, wait a minute. So you host, you have your own talk show called Padgett.
The Padgett Show.
What's the format? Like, what is the vibe?
The reason why I got that deal was because in 1994, every production company signed anyone in their 20s to host a talk show because Ricky Lake had made so much money for Garth Ancier and Fox.
Yes.
So every production, I happened to be the one that Westinghouse signed. But there were shows, so many shows, Tempest Bledsoe and Gabriel Carteris.
Oh, my God.
And Mark Wahlberg, the one who does Temptation Island.
Give us an example like one episode.
One episode was, I love him, why do my parents hate him?
Oh, my God,
and so it'd be like couples. And so it would be a panel. It would be, you know, it would start with two or three people on the panel. It could get up to 10 or 12 people on the panel on the stage.
Yeah.
And I was running back and forth with the microphone, interviewing. You know,
you have a question? Wendy Williams.
Does she ever get up out of that chair,
doesn't she? No, she doesn't. She doesn't.
No, 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 okay. They are not. Talk shows aren't done now the way they were then.
Okay.
Then it was.
Like Oprah did that.
Oprah did that. Phil Donahue did that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what those shows were based on. It was that format.
Wow.
Of you come up and you're talking to people on the stage, and then you go out and you take questions from the audience.
How was it?
It was really fun. I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about the business. I did the audience warm up.
Yes.
I would tell everyone. I didn't know there were audience warm ups. I would we would go to commercial, and I would have to keep getting the audience going.
Yes.
Like, anybody who asks a really exciting question gets this fossil watch.
Yes.
Meanwhile, somebody told me I was not allowed to report how many hours I was working because we shot three shows Thursday, three shows Friday, And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we did man on the street interviews all over San Francisco. But they wouldn't let me report my hours. They said if I reported how many hours I was working, they'd have to pay me more and they'd have to fire people.
How much were you making?
So I was also bartending.
Oh my God.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday nights.
Oh my God.
Just so I could pay my rent.
How much did you make per episode?
That didn't even exist.
How much did you make per week?
$200 a week.
Oh my God. For like seven episodes.
$250 a week. It wasn't by
episode.
You
made like 15 episodes.
It was not.
Wow.
We aired at 1:30 in the morning, to be fair.
How big were
I was being developed is what it's called.
Okay, wait. Two questions. How big were the audiences?
100, 150 people.
How did they fill the crowd?
It was a very successful show. Nothing is shot in San Francisco.
Did you get recognized around San Francisco?
It started happening. It started happening after we were on the air for maybe 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And the first time it happened, I was having brunch with a boyfriend and a new guy, not the guy I moved there with. He's history.
Yeah.
And we're fighting. I'm getting ready. It's the precursor to breaking up with him. It's that fight where you're like, I want to do it right now.
And then daring yourself.
Stop talking and I'll just get the check. And the waitress comes over and she says, some fans of yours paid the check. And I was like,
oh,
what?
My God.
What? And she said, they don't want me to tell you who they are.
No.
And I'm like, they've just watched me being a bitch to my boyfriend and they paid for my check. Like, they love the Patchett show. And I'm like,
oh my God.
And it freaked me
out.
It freaked me out. And I didn't know, I didn't know what to do. And also everyone knew where I lived. I had done an interview with the San Francisco Times.
You're like, here's my address.
The journalist for some reason was like, pissy. Like, she's not from San Francisco and she never will be. But here's her show. And she wrote my home address. She said she came and picked me up at my home. So people were.
It's weird. I had a very rude interviewer last year. In Alaska, wrote the meanest shit. It's like they've already made up. They already hate you before you've opened your mouth.
It's all about them.
Yeah, and they
got nothing to do with you.
This guy wrote the rudest.
What did he do? What did he say?
I can't. You know.
You know you have it memorized.
I actually don't have it memorized.
Then you're healthy.
Normally, you know what? That's amazing because I have to say, a few years ago, I would have memorized.
Of course,
it.
You would.
It would have. It was so degrading.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
Unnecessary. It was like. But I do remember the word coquettish was in there. I was like, what? Like, it was just.
But is that necessarily bad?
The way he wrote it.
It could be bad.
It was just like, it was to do with like stand-up show. It was just like, it was just hateful.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. You know what? Sometimes people, yes, but so she put your home address.
So there were, people questionable. Interactions with people and people waiting outside and people following you and
I remember there was a guy, Chris, at UTA that was like courting me who had discovered you.
That was my first agent.
Chris.
Yeah. Chris, hold on. Oh my God.
He was courting me.
Chris Colan.
Chris Colan was courting me and I remember he kept talking
about
you.
He was great. I'm really sorry you didn't sign with him. That's a bummer.
I fucked up, didn't I?
No. No, your path is perfect the way it
great.
Is. Chris Colan also left the industry, left agenting, and became the first guy that was figuring out like branding. He put the Pepsi logo on the Challenger. I think he became bananas rich.
Right.
He probably bought Martha's Vineyard.
Right.
Chris Colan is fine.
Got it.
And
okay.
What he did was he lied.
What do you mean?
Back then, back in the day, I signed with him, moved to L.A.
Yeah.
Am I going too far forward?
No, I like this. This is perfect.
Moved to L.A., signed with him. I had done the talk show. The talk show wasn't moving forward. Westinghouse bought CBS, and in 95 or 96, CBS had its own stable of 20-something talk show hosts.
Right.
So our show was dead. I signed with Chris Colan. I moved to Los Angeles, and my first I was going on just general meetings.
Yeah.
And I went to a general meeting. I'd had my driver's license for – maybe a week, 2 weeks.
Yes.
I went on a general meeting at NBC and was just talking to Nancy. I can't remember her last name. She was the head of casting for NBC. And while we were sitting there, she said, hold on a second. Marsha, called her, gave me sides, said, go in the other room and work on these and come back in. And I was like, oh, I had never cold read. I didn't know what that
I'd been
doing plays in San Francisco.
Right, yeah.
So I go in the other room, work on the sides, come back in, and she goes, let's read it right now. And she's intense, and we're reading it.
That's intimidating.
Okay, get in the car, follow me. And she's like, Helen, and calls this other woman. She's
no.
They make me follow them. It's the first time I've ever driven on the freeway. They make me follow them to Radford from the Burbank NBC office.
Follow me in a car.
Follow me. I just bought a car.
And it's also, by the way, kids, those people listening, Google Maps didn't exist. There was this horrible book called The Thomas Guide that was 78 pages long. It was
78? It's 400 pages long.
It was like grids, and it was so confusing. So you see, if you lost them, you would never find them again.
I wouldn't know. I didn't know what they were talking about. They said we're going to Radford. I was on the freeway behind them.
Yeah.
Shaking, like tears streaming down my face. I was so scared. I'd never driven on a freeway before.
This is crazy.
We pulled into Radford.
It's your first audition.
I'm wiping
first
everything
freeway.
Off. Yeah, they're not getting out of the car yet. So I'm trying to do my makeup. I'm doing my makeup again in the car really fast.
Oh, Padgett.
And they get out of the car, and I get out, and I'm like, hey. And they said, okay, follow us. We go into one of those bungalows.
Yep.
They go knock on the door, lean in. People are waiting in a waiting room, like waiting to audition. And they're like, come here, come here.
No.
They open the door, order me in the room. Laura San Giacomo, who was famous from Pretty Woman,
is
sitting there. And there are 15 people in the room.
Oh, my God.
And the casting lady says, this is Padgett. This is Laura. You're going to do the scene. It was just shoot me. So I do the scene to play her best friend.
That was because there was a character that
Originally was a woman.
I remember the sides, the breakdown. It wanted a Janine Garofalo type.
I remember a crew cut.
Back in the day, everybody wanted a Janine Garofalo type.
Probably, yeah. And I don't know.
I remember that breakdown. I remember.
Wow. Okay. Well, because it came back a couple of times, and then it ended up going to David Spade.
That's right.
That character was played by. I walk right into the audition. I audition, and they say, great, thanks. And I was like, okay. And I walk out, and I start walking to my car. And someone comes running out, going, where are you going? Where are you going? And I was like, I'm going to go home. And they said, no, you have to sign the something. And I don't know what they're talking about. I think it's a sign-in sheet or something. I don't know. I have a pager. They hand me a contract.
No.
So I go to the – I said, can I use your phone? And I called Chris Cullen at UTA. And I was like, they want me to sign something. And he says, get in your car and get the fuck out of there. And I was like, but I think I did well. Like, I think they want me to come back. And he's like, don't sign a fucking thing. Get in your car. Get the fuck out of there. Okay. So I start walking to the car. They come running back out again. And they're like, you can't leave. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I've just been told I've got to get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry. And I drove away. It was – they wanted me to sign the test op. I wasn't –
Nobody negotiated it.
No, there wasn't any. I don't know what they wanted me to sign.
Can we just recap?
By the time you got
your first play that you auditioned for.
Oh, I suppose this is pretty interesting. You're right.
The first time you auditioned for a play in New York. You walk in and you get it. You go in for one general meeting and they drive you to Radford.
No, I didn't drive myself.
But they drove you.
Because they were in front of me.
They drove you to Radford.
Because I didn't know where to go.
And cut the line. And then you got chased out for a test deal that was not even negotiated.
Correct. Wait, it gets worse. I mean, better, actually.
This is amazing.
So I didn't get Just Shoot Me, obviously. What happened was, by the time I got home, Chris had called and left a message on my answering machine. I was so pissed off. Like, I thought he had cost me a job. Like, I might have gotten a job. He'd left this message. I can't remember what he said, but I was completely confused. So I called him, and I was, like, shaking. Like, why did you tell me to leave? I think they were interested in me. And he was like, they are interested in you, but you don't sign anything unless I look at it first. Now I want you to just sit tight. Everything's going to be fine. What he did was NBC, those casting people, went to Warren Littlefield, and they were like, we saw this girl we like. My agent, NBC called UTA. My agent said to NBC, I don't know what happened. She's green. She just got here from San Francisco, but we're in the middle of negotiating a talent deal with ABC, so she shouldn't have auditioned for complete lie.
Yes.
NBC says, we'd like to sit down with her. if she's about to sign, before you sign anything with ABC,
no,
let our people sit down with her and let's talk to her. Chris fabricated a bidding war between NBC, CBS, ABC, and Fox. I met with every network president.
I should have signed with them.
I met with every network president alone. And every time I got there, they were like, so are your people coming? And I was like, no, we don't have any people. It's just me. And they were – he knew exactly what he was doing. He was brilliant. But that was back when you could lie. No one lies like – no one is a shark agent
like that
anymore.
Did you get a deal?
Oh, yeah. I got a deal.
For a ton of money?
It was $250,000.
Wow!
For 1 year for Fox. And then before that year was over, they signed me to another year.
And then
after that, I signed with CBS.
Can I just say, that means you never went on one audition. You walked into one general meeting.
Okay, wait. All right.
You walked into one general meeting and had three back-to-back. You had three back-to-back.
Development deals for the next 3 years. You're right.
That's amazing.
You're right.
That's
because my agent lied. That's because he was a great agent. It had nothing to do with me.
You should lie. Lying is good, kids. Lying is good. I have to pee so badly. Can we take a 2 second pee break?
Yes.
This is fascinating. Hold that thought.
It's
I'll be
all
right
luck.
Back. Ooh, I don't know about you, but things are getting so hot in here. I think I gotta take a pee break.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hi guys. We're back. Okay,
please let me clarify this.
Please,
it sounds like diamonds are falling out of my vagina with what I was auditioning and not getting anything. The thing that happened with that general meeting and then this whole bidding thing.
Yeah,
I was auditioning and not getting anything. I had very little experience. I'd gone to acting school, but I hadn't worked besides a play or doing a talk show in San Francisco. I had done a couple infomercials. I did like what are they called for banks? You walk around and it's like morale boosting. And here at National Bank,
a corporate thing.
I'd done that. I was auditioning and not getting anything. And then the reason why – when Chris lied to NBC and said ABC is about to sign her to a development deal, which existed back then. They don't really exist now.
No, a lot of people had them.
And NBC was like, well, we want a meeting with her. Then he called all the other networks and they all said, well, we want a meeting with her.
Yeah.
And what he was doing was fabricating a frenzy for an unknown quantity.
Yeah.
All they had of me was a tape of me doing a talk show in San Francisco. I didn't have an acting reel. I didn't have myself on camera doing anything. So all of those networks didn't want to miss out. It didn't matter what I was. I could have been a bunch of radishes if a network believed that another network was going to sign that bunch of radishes. No, they were going to have a meeting.
I agree with you that I feel like when I first started, the first I went on a general and then I went in I went in a general at ABC in New York, and then I got sent to go read for a pilot, and then I read like 7 times, and then they flew me out for a test deal, and then like 7 more people wanted to test. Yeah. Like, I actually think there's a magic when you're brand new, like the magic of the undiscovered. I actually think it's so much harder later.
Yeah.
When you're, it's like, because there's always a new batch of the brand new turnips.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's something about people want to be the person that discovers this like hidden gem.
Yeah.
Where, and it seems,
and they're
so
afraid
easy.
Of yeah. someone else discovering
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not because they can discover a dud anytime.
Yeah.
It will never see the light of day if it's a dud.
Yes.
But if they never even played ball.
Yeah.
To get that bunch of radishes, then they look like assholes.
No, when you're brand new and you're the person that, like, I think that first year, there's a magic. And mm-hmm. I remember thinking, like, wow, it's always going to be this easy. And I was like, oh, oh. Like, and I do think that you have to get scrappy and be willing to, like, reinvent yourself. Like, when did you ever have a slowdown? Like, what? Like, because you've gone kind of from back to back. Like,
well, what happened was I had that development deal with Fox, okay. and I shot a pilot, and it didn't go. And then I had another yep. development deal with Fox.
That happened.
Chris insisted in that second deal with Fox that Fox allow me to be a guest star on other shows.
Oh, you couldn't do that in the first year?
Not the first year. No, they own you and they pay you for the year. And then if your show gets picked up, half of your salary is returned to the network.
Right.
So they pay you a lump sum.
Right.
And then they recoup if your show goes forward.
Right.
So whatever you're being paid, you're only being paid half and the network is taking that money back.
Right. Interesting.
Which is still great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still an ungodly amount of money.
Right.
When I was 27?
Right.
That was crazy.
Right.
So, yeah, what year was that? That was 1996. So I was 27 when all this happened.
Yeah.
Then what happened? Then okay. Now you're going to get mad.
I'm not going
to. Okay, so the second deal at Fox. Meanwhile, I'm auditioning for movies and I'm not getting anything. The second deal with Fox, yeah. when Chris got them to agree I could guest star on another show,
yeah.
I auditioned for a show called Friends. And I got it.
Yeah,
and
my God,
I yeah. did those. Sick,
oh, my God.
It was supposed to be for
I'm
one episode.
I'm not mad. I love this.
And then it ended up being sick.
What did you play?
I played Kathy,
okay.
who Joey is dating, but Chandler falls for Kathy.
Was it fun?
And then it was great. Yeah.
What season? I did
season
an episode.
Four.
I did one episode. Season eight. You had, so they were already like the height of like they were. Already,
it was the biggest show in the world. Wait, Katie really wants
you
to ask
the
a
timeline. Did this happen?
So this happened in what year was that? Then, if it was Friends, was it 2000, 96?
No, it was earlier than that.
No, it was 99. 99.
Because I did 2001. It was right. I did right after 9/11, and they had like the anthrax. They had like the anthrax drill when I did it, and so that was.
Wait, I must have done it in 98.
So season 8.
If I was in season 4,
then that was like 97.
Katie's gonna look it up because I don't know the timeline on this.
What was your favorite part? Who was your buddy on the set?
Matthew Perry.
He was the nicest.
Yeah, he had, and
it.
They were all, honestly, they were all so shockingly nice.
Yeah.
They were all pissed off at Adam Schwimmer for the majority of the time I was there. Because
David Schwimmer.
David, what did I say? Adam?
Adam Schwimmer.
Oh, wow. Adam. David.
He could be an Adam Schwimmer.
David Schwimmer they were mad at because he had made them do a fundraiser for his theater company. But
Chicago.
They were genuinely all really good friends. Like they were,
yeah.
and they invited me to lunch and I would go to the commissary with them. And like they were really, really nice. It was surprising.
Okay. It was 97, by the way.
97. Oh, it was 97. So it was 1 year. It was 1 year after I got here in 96. So I must have had the Fox deal in 96. Yeah, I did. I had the Fox deal.
Oh,
February or March?
It's the first guest. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is truly.
Yeah. Pilot season 97 and then pilot season 98. I signed again with Fox and I must have done Friends in September.
Is. Okay, so did you. I read somewhere that Hugh Hefner sent you a handwritten letter on Conan offering you to be in Playboy. Is that true?
Yes. I. At a certain point, and I'm not really sure what year it was. I want to say 2004. I went to Hugh Hefner's 80th birthday party.
Oh my
so
God.
I don't know what year that
oh
was.
Oh, my God. Did you go to the Grotto?
I did. I swam naked in the grotto.
Oh my God.
I went to the Playboy Mansion twice, invited by Hugh Hefner.
How was it?
Because Holly and the girls all watched the girls watched a show I was on called Huff on Showtime
with
Hank Azaria and Oliver Platt. They loved Huff, so they invited me to the mansion, and I went.
I love that they loved Huff.
Yeah, I know. I was so surprising.
That's awesome.
So I went to the mansion. The first time was just a regular, you know, what they do. They have, like, this weird buffet laid out, and I swam in the grotto. The first time, maybe I wasn't naked. I think the second time I swam in the grotto naked. Because, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Why not?
How was it?
Oh, it was fabulous.
Yeah, yeah.
There's, you know, the thing that's under the cave.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
I walked in. I brought my friend Justin Kirk, who's a guy friend.
I love him. He's a rascal.
He was being a rascal with these two chicks who said they were sisters. One was from like Sao Paulo, Brazil, and the other one was from Helsinki. They were sisters.
He was the brother of Helsinki.
The brother on weed.
He's such a fun rascal.
Andy.
He's like a fun. He's so talented.
He's amazing.
And he's such a rascal.
Yeah. He's on Kidding this season with Jim Carrey.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. And last season.
What does he play?
He plays Judy Greer's husband, so Jim Carrey's ex-wife's boyfriend.
I auditioned for an episode I don't think it was the pilot. I think I had auditioned for like episode 2 or something. I thought it was really good. It was really interesting.
It is.
I don't know.
It's a wild show.
I bet it's wild.
It's good. He's great.
So
I went to the Playboy Mansion with Justin the second time I went.
Yeah.
And we split up, and I walked into the grotto, and there were people having sex in the grotto.
This is exciting.
And I ran out to find Justin dude, people
are
having sex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I went to find him. He was just outside. I grabbed him. We come back in, and I just see the back of a rock door closing with a security guard. The thing about the Playboy Mansion, I don't know what it's like now. Back then, it was run by the women. Men couldn't. It was Amazonia. You couldn't touch a woman. You couldn't. The women were responsible for everything. So you'd be like, get me a drink. They'd get you a drink. Go get me some jalapeno poppers. If a guy even touched a woman without her touching him first, a guard was there and that guy was out. There were security.
Wow.
It was the most.
That's
because
interesting.
Part of me, and I think that's why I swam naked the second time.
You're
I was like, this is totally safe. So I took like dollar bills out of my purse, tucked my purse in the grotto wall and just swam out, you know, tits up and handed tip money to a couple of guys to get drinks for me and Justin.
Yes.
Justin he'd seen me naked, all right? We were exes, but like totally just friends at this
point.
That's why I was able to be naked in front of
him. That's a fun ex. That's
always the best, yeah. So it was fun. But I didn't pose naked. I couldn't do it. I couldn't.
I think it's yeah.
I couldn't do it.
I think what they're doing now, it seems like the reinvention. I mean, just the covers and stuff. I like the sort of fun arty.
I haven't seen it since it's Christina.
They're kind of like trying to make it more appealing to the millennials. It's less dirty and like I think a little cooler and more arty. I don't know.
But it's I think it's underpants and maybe topless.
Yeah, it's not as I feel like it's almost like somewhat in a weird way kind of old fashioned, but like I don't know. Maybe
like Camera Club maybe.
I think it's kind of like it feels like they've been trying to get cool. I don't know. Okay, so you dated Justin. Let's talk guys. What do you wish you could say to your 25-year-old Paget? What was your Achilles heel with guys? Like, I would date guys that would like hit on my friends or like were threatened. They would like me at first, but then they'd be competitive with me about my career. You know what I mean? Like, it was hard to find a guy that could handle what I did. Did you ever have a hard time with that? Because you're married to a nice guy now.
My guy is the best.
You're
right
a really
now.
Nice
yeah.
guy.
So the Hallmark card answer would be I don't regret anything because it got me where I am now.
But what'd you?
No, I think I was. I lived with an actor for 6 years in L.A.
Okay.
Who I met fairly recently while I was shooting Friends.
Okay.
We met and we started living together, and he sort of lost his way. The more successful I got, the more he was having a hard time with it. And
it's hard for two actors.
It ended badly. And then from that point on, really, I think I was very unhealthy.
Okay.
And my choices were – the men were fine.
Yeah.
It was – I was in and out in 3 month increments.
Yeah.
For how long? 15 years? I mean, yeah. And it was like visiting the zoo.
Yeah.
You would, if you lined up the guys I dated next to each other, you would be like, there is absolutely nothing linking any of these people physically or spiritually except they were all nice and funny. Like they were all very different and wrong for me, but great guys.
Yeah.
But I was doing it to myself.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want anyone. I didn't want a partner. I was terrified someone was going to tell me what to do and what I was allowed to do and what I was not going to let anyone in. I was not going to let anyone in.
I used to cut and run a lot. I would cut and run. And I did not. Don't rein me in.
Dad.
Don't you control me.
I'm the boss here.
Yeah, I am out of here. What was different when you met Steve?
Not much. I mean, I met Steve. I met Steve. We've been together 10 years. We've been married 5 years last week. I met him. I knew him for a year and a half or 2 years as friends with Matthew before anything romantic happened. But we were hanging out because Goobler was lightheartedly dating a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And, Goobler would always bring Steve on like dates with people. There's a very funny, Garfunkel and Oates song called You and Me and Your Friend Steve that is about Matthew and Steve. So Steve was always going – so I would end up hanging out with my female friend and Goobler and Steve would show up. And so then Steve and I were essentially on double dates
So they weren't trying to fix you up.
They wanted to make it more social and less – not like a big heavy date thing.
Yes.
So we would go ahead. Then Steve and I started making out and I was like, oh, this is so stupid. He's 12 years younger than I am. He's a musician.
Yes.
He's new in town.
I'm a
fucking bitchy old broad. It's gross. People are going to think I'm his mom. Like
I love this.
And I was bad. I was really – I pushed him away and I told him we would never be serious.
Yeah.
And it couldn't go any further. And then
we
started hanging out and just kissing. And then
how he handle it when you would say that? Was he like, I'm not afraid of you? And
totally, completely nothing to prove, confident.
He was like, whatever, lady, say whatever you want. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, lady.
Whatever.
It's time to get sexy.
Oh, yeah.
I need a sexual timeout.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Where did you get married?
We got married in Hollywood at what was it called? It's gone now. It was a little hotel on Vine Street that now has been turned into some kind of smaller Soho house sort of
thing. I know what you're talking about.
The Redbury.
I like that building.
Yeah.
I like that.
And there was – what? It's gone, yeah. It was the Redberry Hotel, and there was
a cute place.
Like a bar area called the Library that was just like a little library with a little bar.
Yeah.
Our wedding was 14 people.
Yeah.
It was my mom and dad, a brother and sister, Steve's brother and his wife and son and his mom and dad, and Matthew Gray Gubler from Criminal Minds,
who
introduced us. He was our efficient.
Did you wear a wedding dress?
I did. I wore my mom's wedding dress.
Oh. Yeah. Did you go on a honeymoon?
Boy, not for another year.
That's all right.
I'm terrible at planning.
Okay, wait a minute. Brother and sister. Tell me about your brother and sister. Are you tight with them?
Yes. Yes. They
just had
a baby. My brother is 2.5 years younger.
And then your sister?
I don't have a sister. Sorry. His wife, Catherine, is
okay.
My sister-in-law.
And you're tight with him?
Yes.
What's he like?
And we have been. He's
What's his name?
A rascal. His name is Ivan.
Yeah, he's a rascal.
And his wife is Catherine. And they just had a baby boy named Charlie.
Yeah.
And they live in Dumbo, which is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it was rough when they moved in. Like, they have paid their dues.
Yeah.
He's a designer. She works for her brother's hedge fund company called Blue Sand Investments.
Fancy.
And they cook and they travel a lot. They're far more fashionable and fancy than Steve and I,
yeah.
who are kind of nerdy homebodies.
But they're
really, like, tall and beautiful and like they go they travel and they have fabulous dinner parties that look like photo shoots.
That's
insane.
My friends in Brooklyn are like that. I feel like they like just whip things. They like just throw a pie in the oven and like it's like an Edison bulb everywhere they go. Like
yes.
that whole world.
Yes.
They listen to NPR and make like Cornish game heads.
Yes.
And they go on like hiking. Yeah, they're just like
they're great.
Like,
yeah, it's incredible. But I don't have the energy for it. I'm so impressed.
And your parents live in Maine?
My parents live half of the year in Maine. Spring and summer they live in Maine. And in the fall and winter they live in Florida because it just gets
so cold. Maine is so cold.
Freezing. And their house, which they bought in 1968 before I was born, was built in 1870-something. So it is a drafty – it gets too cold
to
live.
They're not weatherproof.
No.
Okay. I have three final questions. Number one, how has it been – how do you feel with Criminal Minds ending? What do you hope to do? How are you feeling? State of the Union.
State of the Union. I feel great.
Yeah.
I appreciate that Criminal Minds – has ended because I think we did a good job and I think we ended positively.
Yeah.
And I think we all have other things to do. And I think 15 seasons
is a lot.
Great.
When you did a lot of comedy.
Well, I left for 4 years and went back for the last 4 seasons. So, yeah. And I wanted to do comedy. You know, when you do that, you know, tough FBI, people are dying and there's hearts in jars.
Well, you came from the comedy world.
Yeah, I'd only done
sitcoms. You only did comedy.
And, yeah.
So did you find that like coming off of that? Because I sometimes feel like this business, like it's the last thing you did is the thing that people remember. Like,
yeah, of course.
Was it hard to come off and be like, I want to do comedy again? Or were people like, we know you do comedy and that's fine?
I think because I really was aware that when Criminal Minds ended, I wanted to pursue comedy. I've tried my best to keep my foot in it. And part of that is doing Will You Accept This Rose
with
God. You.
Such a
with
joy.
Doing Thrilling Adventure, doing doing Drunk History, just doing what are fun things that don't pay that I like that you, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I just want it to be enjoyable. I don't.
Yeah.
So I knew when Criminal Minds ended that I was going to pursue that. And I was really lucky that I got a couple of episodes of Mom, which is a multicam that I haven't done in ages.
I've never met.
So it was.
That's actually not true. I met very briefly Anna Faris and
Allison, Janney. And
they were lovely.
It's crazy.
I mean, both of them
are
so talented.
All of them.
What do you play on the show?
I played Anna's boss, this bitchy Adderall addicted lawyer.
Great.
So I'm hoping I'll go back, but I don't know. You know, that show has six main women and
who are the other
William
women?
William Fichtner
on?
Plays Allison's husband.
I love him.
He's amazing.
I love him.
It's a big show. It's a big cast. So I don't know how much they need guest stars. I don't know if I'll be going back.
That's fun,
they said
though.
It's possible. I don't know.
That's
I hope so.
Fun. Okay. Number two. This is a very important final question.
Oh, dear. I'm scared.
You're getting out of the limo. First night at the Bachelor. What do you wear? First night at the Bachelor. You're getting out of the limo. I'll tell you, I wear a...
What are you wearing?
I wear a mini dress in the front that has a train in the back.
A high-low.
I panic and I make an error and I wear a high-low because I fucked up and I've panicked and then I want to show my legs.
But you have beautiful legs.
I want to show my legs, but then I don't want to wear a mini dress and I panic and I wear like a mullet dress. And then I try and execute some kind of like a barrel roll or a move. I try and make a move up to the Bachelor and it doesn't necessarily go as well. I really explode out of the car. But I then look back and I think I shouldn't have worn the mullet dress. I keep tripping on the train.
Oh, no.
That's what do you wear getting out of the limo? Anna's going to wear a gown that children have to carry because it's so heavy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's not a good first impression.
Yeah. Erin's going to wear a football outfit and she's going to come out and take off the helmet and have like flowing hair, but have like black paint.
The black lines under her eyes.
And she's going to spike the ball and then like knock the teeth out of the Bachelorette because she's on the Bachelorette.
Oh, my God.
What do you wear getting out of the limo?
Okay. I am going to wear a silver full body leotard with a hood with wraparound black shades.
Yes.
Wait,
I love it.
I am in.
I love this so much.
One of those.
Yes.
Cabo San Lucas ocean balls, like a hamster wheel where you run on the ocean.
Yes. No one's done that yet.
Yes.
No one's
so done I just that yet. Pedal up like a silver grandma hamster.
Yes. That's so
And he
so
can't
good.
Hear me and I'm like,
that's so good. Nobody's done that yet. That's a great idea.
I feel like that really shows who I am.
I like the wraparound shades and Anna's dying. Yeah. Katie, I forget. Katie, what were you wearing again?
Well, you said for Peter.
She's just kind of just an airplane. Okay, how about just for generic? Let's say for generic Ben Higgins. What do you wear for Ben Higgins? I don't know. I mean, I honestly would just want
to
wear like pajamas and be like, pajamas and be like, if you can accept me like this, then you accept me because this is what I like
that's
to wear.
That's outstanding.
Track pants and
Has anyone
sweatshirt.
Done that?
No.
Because that's the way to go.
I would love to. Just literally like track pants and a fucking hoodie and just be like, bitch, this is it. Like, sorry.
That's great.
I don't know.
That's smart.
Now, I know this will come out later. Because, and I hope you guys have paused and gone and bought the book. But go buy a Little Miss Little Compton book. It's such a fun read.
Sorry, what's the name again? I want to make sure I get it right.
It's called Little Miss Little Compton, because I'm from Little Compton, Rhode Island. Guys, if you enjoy this podcast, I guarantee you enjoy the book.
And I can't wait.
It's a pre-order. My dream is to be on the bestseller list. You have to sell 8,000 copies. Apparently, it's all about the pre-sales. So you've got
to be done.
We
can do it.
That's what I'm saying. We can do it. It's 8,000 is the number.
I can order it on 3 Kindles.
We got 3 Kindles.
I don't share with my mom.
That's right. There you go. You can get one for your mom. You can order one.
One for mom, one for Steve, one for me.
Consider it like a present that you send to your future self, that you like yourself enough in 2020 to give yourself a present that is going to come this fall. And you're going to go, oh, my God, thank you so much, Sarah. Thanks for sending that to myself. I appreciate that Sarah liked herself enough to send it. Okay. I know that this will be airing later. I'm very excited to do the draft picks with you.
Ooh.
And Kirsten.
Yeah.
How do you say her last name properly?
Vangsness.
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 Yes.
And I might actually make people go down the line and say their outfit. So remember your outfit. Or you can change it.
Oh, my outfit. No, why would I change that? That's
perfect. I think it is perfect. So we'll need to hear what Wells is going to wear.
Oh.
Even though he already did it. But maybe we'll have him go last. He had the backup singers. He brought a band with him. He brought a band with him.
Oh, in real life he did.
Yeah.
Casey and JoJo.
That's right.
It was a four top. And then, like, I need to know what Lance Bass would wear. And then I need to know what Rob Benedict would wear.
Yeah.
I just got excited saying Rob Benedict.
I can't wait to do this. This is going to be so much
fun. And then we're also having our sketch fest show. Padgett, is there anything else that you feel like You just want everybody to know?
No, did I?
No, I
satisfy your criteria.
I gotta tell you, above and beyond, this has been a
because it wasn't. I'm so surprised. It sounds like I really lucked into some great shit.
I know,
I'm excited about that, and I can see how writing a book would be so eye opening that you are able to look back
it
at your life,
been bizarre.
Looking through a different lens.
I can't imagine. Well, and it's also the rewriting process, like. I wrote it and then I've had to keep combing through it. Like, I've been reading it. Like, I'm so ready to close the chapter. And by the way, by the time this airs, this is long gone. I'm actually turning it in tomorrow. But like I'm so ready to be done with it. But it forces you. It's just so interesting because you're like, all this, like, I have all these funny friends. And I was just saying this to Aaron. Like, I have all these funny friends that I've gotten to know because of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And in life, you know, you very rarely sit down and like really like what makes you you and like how did you do this? And nobody I knew grew up in the industry or had any connections or like, so it's been so fascinating just to hear everyone's journey. You and I are the first two that were not popular. Rob was popular.
Oh, I believe that.
Wells was popular.
Yeah.
Aaron was popular.
But they deserve it, and I bet they ruled kindly.
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? There's no way they were popular because they were rich or they were popular because their father was powerful. Like,
yeah.
The kind of popular people that we dealt with in the school that we went to, it was a very different thing.
It was a different thing.
And I
except
all
for
three
John
of
Viner,
those people,
who was
I
popular because he was funny. He was the one. You guys, what a joy. What a journey. Guys, thank you so much for tuning into Feeling Thorny. And
Feeling Thorny.
Thank you so much for everybody listening. Thank you, Padgett Brewster.
Thank you, Arden. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Anna.
We love you. Okay, you guys. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Oh, yeah. Gonna get all up in you tonight. It feels so good. I just got one little question for you, girl. Will you accept this rose? Oh, will you accept this rose into your world? Oh, will you accept this rose into your world?
Will you accept this rose is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.